Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMO Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Ken Shearer. He's an executive coach, a career coach, keynote speaker, and most recently, an author. He spent over 25 years at Johnson & Johnson in leadership roles across sales, marketing, recruiting, training, and leadership development. And he has written a book entitled, What's Trust Got to Do With It? Transforming Leadership Culture and the Job Search. And he shows how trust becomes a foundation of meaningful relationships and how those relationships drive results. Looking forward to today's conversation with Ken. I love to hear people's stories and love to hear a little bit of your background and kind of how you've gotten to where you are today, and definitely love to hear an overview.
Okay. Well, part of it, I'm not sure how I got to where I am today because I'm a born and bred New Yorker and I currently live in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania, and I'm not sure how that happened, how I ended up here. I was always more of a city guy, but here I am in the mountains and loving it. It's great. But professionally speaking, I spent 25 years at Johnson & Johnson, and I was in different sales and marketing leadership roles. I led the recruiting for the U.S., and I also led three different sales training and leadership development teams at different operating companies of J&J. And then at 52 years old, with two kids in college and one in high school, I ran into a new general manager at the operating company I was working at. And he said to me, in a first meeting, Mark, an introductory meeting, he said, I've led two different training and development teams in my career, and you will never live up to my expectations. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, I've got some leadership classes I think you could benefit from, but sure. I didn't say that. But I did. I'm usually one of those people that when I'm driving home, I should have said this, should have said that. But I was on it this time, Mark, and I said, well, you know, I think if you look at my last 24 years of performance reviews, you'll see I've always met or exceeded expectations, and I look forward to exceeding yours. And to me, that was a drop the mic kind of moment. I nailed it. But he said, nope, you'll never live up to my expectations. So made my life difficult for the next few months, and finally I got the call to HR. I was let go, and it was a very difficult time for me. I had two kids in college, one going to college soon, and not to mention my pride and my ego being hurt. But I eventually worked through it, and I ended up landing three new jobs in my 50s. The last one with Bristol-Myers Squibb, where I decided I was done with corporate America. I'm pretty sure corporate America was done with me, too. And I started my own coaching practice, initially as a career coach, helping people who were going through what I went through as a mid to late career person, all of a sudden having to look for a job after not doing so for so many years. And then I added in my executive coaching based on my leadership development experience. And now I also do keynote speaking as well.
Okay. Well, I know you have a book that I just received, and it's called What's Trust Got to Do With It? And tell me a little bit about just kind of your journey writing the book and what was kind of the motivation behind putting
this. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, although my time at J&J ended not the way I wanted it to, I still think very highly of the company. I think it's given me a lot personally in my life, but also I do think for the most part, they try to do the right thing and usually do, although we've seen in the news, they don't always, but that happens. And one of the things I realized that while I was there was a lot of why J&J did so well was in the relationships they built. They built these trusting relationships with their customers, with their employees, with the stockholders, the communities. And I realized that that value of trust is so important that the phrase I use is trust is the foundation of great relationships, and great relationships are the key to success. And, you know, from a J&J point of view, they have a thing called our credo. It's a one-page document, four paragraphs. first paragraph's about, and it was written by General Robert Wood Johnson, the founder of J&J. And the first paragraph is about the responsibility the company has to the healthcare workers and the patients they serve, giving them safe and effective products. The second paragraph is about the responsibility to employees, giving them a safe environment to work at a fair wage. The third paragraph is the responsibility to communities, giving back to the communities, being good stewards of the environment. And the last paragraph is about the responsibility of stockholders, giving them a fair return on their investment. And what's interesting is that when the general wrote that, he was the only stockholder. So, but he knew that if he built good, solid, trusting relationships with the other stakeholders, he'd be taken care of. And for 90 years, J&J has paid out quarterly dividends to stockholders. So he was pretty much right. And that's been, they've used that document, the Tylenol scare, Mark. Do you remember that one?
Sure.
Back in the 80s? Yep. I mean, J&J looked at it and said our first responsibility is to healthcare workers and customers, and they pulled the product from the shelf. They didn't try to do a PR campaign or advertising campaign to minimize it. But they, because they had developed, they were the mother and baby company, right? Baby shampoo, baby powder, Band-Aids. And they couldn't risk losing that trust that they had built with their consumers, because it would not only hurt Tylenol, it could hurt the whole company. And then when they put the product back on the shelf with the first tamper-resistant bottle that annoys a lot of us when we try and open it, it quickly became the number one product on over-the-counter pain reliever again, because they never lost the trust they had built with their customers. So I believe so strongly in that that I built what I call a trust success model, which is like all great models, an acronym that stands for transparency, results, understanding, simplicity, and teams. And that's the core of my coaching, and that's where my book came from as well.
Mm. So thinking back to that first team that you led, and we've got a lot of people that listen to this podcast that are new leaders, maybe first-time CEOs, and coming into a new team, getting the trust of the team sometimes can be a challenge. And maybe you've had a promotion internally, and your peers are now people that report to you. And how do you gain that trust with
as a leader? It's funny you say that, because I was promoted. I was a sales rep. And then I became the district manager of that district where I was a sales rep. And things changed. A couple things changed. First of all, when I would go out to ride with reps, I realized that they weren't doing what I was doing. I thought everybody did what I did, but I guess that's why I got promoted and they didn't. But secondly, when we would have our sales meetings, we used to always go out for drinks at night or whatever. And I realized I wasn't getting invited to those anymore now that I'm the boss. But I think that what the biggest mistake a lot of people make is they come in with that there's a new sheriff in town perspective, and I'm going to change this. Like, even like I said, people weren't doing what I was doing, but for me to come in right off the bat and say, nope, you got to do it this way, is not the way to go. That's the way to get people to distrust you, because they think you're looking to change them. You're not going to accept their ideas or their changes. So I think it's important to come in and really get a lay of the land. And it's a bit of a balance, because you're promoted because they expect you to do something as a leader. But on the other hand, you need to kind of lay back a little and get to know people better, let them know what you're all about. I think you need to really show that you care about them and their success, and you're going to help them be successful in any way that they need, because each person's going to be different. So I think a lot of those first 90 days should be about getting to know people, getting to know the business, making some strategic changes without trying to blow the place up in the first week that you're there.
So the first, the T is for transparency. And I think sometimes people's new leaders have the imposter syndrome, where they're like, I don't want to be too transparent because I don't want people to know what I don't know. Talk a little bit about that as a leader coming in.
Yeah. That's a tough one, because I think not only is it imposter syndrome, but on the other hand, it's the I know everything syndrome. See, that's why I was promoted, because I know it all. But I often say to people, too, there's a reason why Michael Jordan isn't coaching a basketball team. And that's because he was a great individual contributor, but he can't coach people, because he just expects them to do what he did, which most people can. But to me, the transparency, then, I do think that being a good leader, there is some level of vulnerability you need to show. People need to be able to relate to you, and you need to be able to say, you know, hey, this is something I did that didn't work out, or this is an area I'm not great at, so here's how I overcome it or try to overcome it. Because I think people appreciate that. They can relate to you more. The other part of transparency in my model is about showing all your cards, giving as much information as you can. There's always going to be some you have to hold back. But the more information you give people, the more ability they have to take advantage of opportunities when they come across their way, or to handle challenges that come across their way. And too often, leaders hold it too close to the vest, and they think, I'm the only one who can make the decisions.
You mentioned in your book, number two, results. Talk a little bit about that, of getting, you know, again, I think the as a new leader coming in, you want to get, you know, want to make sure that you're hitting the numbers and you're doing everything you need to get your team performing at a high level. But talk a little bit about that. How do you do that?
Yeah, and I think results are interesting, because clearly we have bottom line results we have to hit, as you mentioned, hitting the numbers. But to me, results is not all about the end result. Some of it is about how you got there. We used to say in JJ that if you achieve your ultimate goal, but you left bodies in your wake, that's not a great result. You know, it's a good result because you hit the numbers, but it's not going to that's hard to replicate when you beat people up along the way. So I do think it's about setting milestones and being able to check in and to coach when necessary, to either support good results or course correct on the way. Because if you wait till the end, it's too late. You know, you missed your opportunity. So I think part of it is milestone results. But the other thing, when you come talk about building trust, it's hard for someone to trust you if they don't know what you're looking for. So if you don't have clear goals that are agreed upon and understood between you as the leader and the direct report, then if you want to give some kind of critique or coaching, and that person says, well, we never talked about it. I didn't know that's what you wanted. We never talked about it. And then they almost could become gun shy because they don't know what you want. How can I can't be successful. This guy or woman is looking to just get me because they're not telling me what they want. It's interesting. A lot of people I coach, my executive coaching, they'll tell me the person on the team isn't getting the job done. They're not doing well. I said, well, what kind of conversations have you had? I tell them to get the job done. I said, well, do they know what your expectations are? And often the response is, well, they should. They've been doing this job for so long. They should know what they are. And it's not fair to ask someone to achieve a goal that they don't know what it is. So being really clear on what the results you're looking for are important to building trust, because then it allows you to have that coaching conversation, which can be more authentic and meant to help the person, and they know that.
Talk briefly about kind of the understanding, the you and the trust, that motivation to understand your team as well as what's going on.
Mm-hmm. I think it, to me, if arguably the understanding is the most important part of my model, and that is you need to understand where people are coming from and where they want to go. In other words, some people want to just stay in their role and be great at their role, and they're happy there and they don't want anymore. So then you need to coach them accordingly. Give them the training, give them the coaching, the feedback that will help them be better in their role. Other people want to excel. They want to move up in the organization or do more. So you need to coach them accordingly. You need to give them developmental opportunities to show their leadership. In pharmaceuticals, a lot of times we'd have them, they would be the coach for new hires. They would lead meeting sections. They would do things that they would do in their next role so that when they got into that role, they were ready for that. So I always encourage my clients to have regularly scheduled one-on-one meetings with their direct reports. And they could be every week, every 2 weeks. I wouldn't go much more than, you know, once a month would be the least I would do. And those meetings aren't necessarily about you're doing this, you're doing that, or what's happening with this project. It's more like, how are you doing? What's going on? What's getting in your way of being more successful? What can I do to help you? And it's really showing that person you care. And then the last part of it, not only that you care, but then you can help them when you know more. And then the last part of that is, even if you coach someone to the point where they get a job, a better job somewhere else, well, obviously that's not what we want. But if you really care about your people, you should be happy for them. You should even celebrate that. And that not only sends a message to that person that they were in the right place, who knows, they may come back. They may tell other people, hey, that's a guy you want to work for, a woman you want to work for. But it also tells the team that, wow, really do care about how we do. Wherever we could be more successful, you're going to help me get there. And that creates a lot of trust also.
Yeah. The fourth letter in the in trust is the S, which is for simplicity. And talk a little bit about how as a leader, what do you mean by that, and how do you lead?
Yeah. Well, I know I don't have to tell you, Mark, we live in a complicated world these days. There's so much information coming at us from so many different ways. And, you know, I've been in too often in places where I'm guessing you've seen it or experienced where the board wants to see a presentation on this. And you spend 2 weeks putting together the perfect presentation for the board instead of 2 weeks focusing on getting the job done and helping the company be successful. And so I think as a leader, you want to try to minimize those distractions and really help your team focus on true priorities. And there can't be too many priorities. As the saying goes, if everything's a priority, then nothing's a priority. Everything's the same. So you really want to have one or two or maybe three priorities that people are focusing on. Of course, they have other things to do, administrative work, presentations to give, but you want to try to help them focus on what's really important to them. And again, that is a way to build trust because they know you're helping them be successful. You're fighting for them to keep their desk clear of all the nonsense that's being asked of them. And I think it's just a really important part of helping people to be successful.
The final letter stands for the T for teams.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times, again, when people maybe have been in an individual contributor role and then they've been promoted into leading a team, that sometimes that mindset shift is a little bit more difficult than they probably imagined. But talk a little bit about that. How do you build good teams?
Yeah, I think teams are very important, and it can be particularly challenging today where there's remote and hybrid work going on. So it was hard sometimes when you have people in the same location, let alone spread around the country or the world even. So I think teams, there's a number of different aspects of it. One is the internal team that especially if you're remote and hybrid, have remote and hybrid workers, that isolation can be bad. You know, it's hard to focus sometimes, but B, we all have this negative voice in our head that sometimes can really build these terrible stories that aren't true and we don't want to hear. So helping your team stay connected with each other, with you as a leader, with the company, knowing what's going on and just feeling connected to that team, again, is that feeling of being part of something greater than yourself that's very important in terms of being motivating. The second part of teams is your network. And this is both for your current role, but maybe for future roles. In your current role, you should be networking with people who are doing what you're doing or similar work so that you might share best practices. You want to network internally to your company. So you learn about other people in different roles in different departments that may make you a good candidate for a future role, again, within the company, but in a different department. And then certainly networking outside the company, not only for best practices, but you might find additional opportunities for yourself. And then the last team is your personal team. I really believe you have to have your family, your friends, your loved ones that you celebrate great times with, that help you get through the tough times, that take you away from work a little bit so you could clear your head and enjoy the life you want to live. That's why we're working, right? So I think those teams are important. So you have your business teams, and then you have your external family and friends as well.
Yeah. Well, you definitely encourage people pick up your book, what's Trust Got to Do with It. And I know that you probably continue to grow and develop as a leader and read books. Any books that you would recommend somebody put on their reading list?
Yeah. Some of them are classics. The Good to Great, I always think, is just, one of the all-time books. And some of it is, like the hedgehog principle, focusing. Some of that has to do with my simplicity part of my trust model. So I always like that one. I always like the Lencioni books. Patrick Lencioni. I like those because they're told very story-like, so you could really relate to them. And then a more recent book is a book called The Story Bank by Matt Zaun, Z-A-U-N. He's maybe not, one of these, like a Jim Collins kind of author or Patrick Lencioni, but he talks about the importance of storytelling. And I think that no matter where you are, if you're interviewing for a job, you got to tell good stories about your experience. If you're in a role and you want to get your ideas across or, present something successfully, you got to tell a good story. If you're developing your business, it's about storytelling and leading a team. How do you, get them on the same page, so to speak. So I think he does a great job of helping you develop strategic stories, strategic plans to be successful.
Outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
It's been 3 years, a little more than 3 years now, where I've experienced the joy of grandparenting. Mm-hmm. And there's, I don't know, there's nothing like it. I mean, it's hard to explain, but it's kind of like being a parent. You can't explain it until your kid's born, then you're like, now I know what everybody was talking about. So I really enjoy, I have three grandkids, spending time with them. And then being in the mountains, we do a lot of hiking and just getting out and enjoying life. Because that's, again, there's I guess it's cliched, do you work? Do you live to work or do you work to live? And I really believe we should work to live. So I try to balance those two things.
Yeah, that's great. Parting advice that you would give a new and up and coming leader?
I would say don't expect to do things, change the world all at once. Take your time, build the relationships that will help you to be successful. And that's relationships with your team, with your colleagues, with upper management, because they're the ones that will help you to be successful. You can't do it on your own. You need other people to be successful. There used to be a time when people would do that back in the day, the all-powerful leader. That doesn't work anymore. You need other people. So yeah. Build those relationships and you will be successful.
So how would somebody learn about your work? What's the best way to?
Well, I love meeting people and networking. And I do offer a complimentary coaching session if people want to check me out and bounce ideas off me or get some advice. And you could, on my LinkedIn profile, again, I'd love to connect with you on LinkedIn, but in my contact section is actually my calendar link. So you can go right there and schedule 30 minutes to talk. You can reach out to me at ken@surecoaching.com or my website, surecoaching.com. I didn't get too creative on all those different names. It's all about Sure Coaching.
Well, thanks so much, Ken. I appreciate our time today. And I know this is going to be helpful for those that are listening and encourage people to pick up your book and definitely some great thoughts and a great model to be using as far as you lead.
All right. Well, thank you, Mark. This has been great. I appreciate you having me on. And thanks for asking me some really good questions. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.